Welcome to Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur, author, and podcast host. Whether success for you is more money, time with your family, a healthy, well-balanced life, or freedom, I'm interviewing guests and getting you the advice to make it happen. So join me as we uncomplicate the complicated, help you define success, and give you the strategies to make it happen. Hi, and thank you for joining us on the Success Is Podcast. I'm Phil Portman. Joining me today is Alan Draper. Alan is a serial entrepreneur, investor, business growth expert, attorney, CEO of Proof Pest Control, and the host of two successful podcasts, The Business Growth Pod and Bug Bucks Podcast. Thank you for joining us today, Alan.
Hey, happy to be here, Phil. Very excited.
So let's kick it off with, what does success mean to you?
So I think, you know, success is, you know, I have a two-part definition. One is, I believe success is us, you know, just realizing our potential. Like, I think I heard a quote one time that talked about success, or, you know, fulfillment or whatever, is when, you know, years down through your life, your potential self, like who you could become in all different areas of your life, is congruent with who you actually are. And I focus on seven different areas of my life: spiritual, family, mental, physical, professional, financial, and social. And I don't think any one area, if you have great success in any one of those areas, can compensate for failure in other areas. Like, if I'm super, super wealthy, right? Financial is number six on my list. I'm super wealthy, but my family's just a disaster. I don't consider that success. And then I think the other, you know, aspect of being successful is this ability to control our time, being able to do what you want with your life. And if you, within those seven areas that I focus on, if any catastrophe is going on, it's really tough to be able to control your time. And it's not just about money. A lot of times people think that's just about money, but, you know, if I'm having this spiritual like conundrum, or I'm faced with issues with my family, or I'm faced with issues in my profession, I'm not able to control my time because I'm putting out fires. And, you know, in life, we all get faced with difficult circumstances. Sometimes we create them, sometimes they happen to us. But the people that are the most successful in life are the ones that are able to spend their time and energy focusing on the things that they can control.
Yeah, great. So you have a lot going on. I mean, looking through your podcast, I mean, you are generating a ton of content to running the businesses, to everything you have going on. And it's a topic that comes up all the time. And I know it's probably not the most exciting, but the time management, how are you accomplishing so much? And especially when you're talking about having a full balanced life where you still have a family, you're not neglecting them, and some of the other things that you have going on, how are you still achieving so much in business at the same time?
I think there's a lot that goes into it, and I'm always trying to improve with time management. But things that I'm really good at, one is surrounding myself with excellent people. So before we hit the record button here, we were talking about Hunter, who's in charge of my social media. So a lot of people look at what I'm able to accomplish on social media and just the volume and the quality of what I'm able to produce, and they attribute that to me. And what's actually happening is I've got Hunter and other people in the background that are putting things together that allow me to do other things. So right now, for example, I'm creating content, right? I'm on your podcast, but I'm killing two birds with one stone. And, you know, once we wrap this up, Hunter's going to go to work, start creating, you know, different clips and shorts and whatever he has to do, because he's an expert in that area. So that's one thing, is just surrounding myself with really successful people, and getting them to buy into a vision of what I'm trying to accomplish with them. Another part is I'm really trying to focus on this, Phil, and that's just being present. Because I have so many things going on. So I own 27 businesses. One of them I'm a silent partner in. But this isn't like, you know, I own shares in a company. When I say I own 27 businesses, this is like, I started either with a partner or solo, 24 of them. So it's like hands-on stuff, but so I do have a lot going on. I have three small kids, 10 and 8-year-old boys and a 4-year-old girl. I've been married for 15 years and my family is very important to me. My spiritual life is very important to me. And I got really good at focusing on one thing at a time. Like right now, I have businesses that have a lot of fires, I can imagine. But nothing matters to me except for sitting down here with you and having our chat. So I'm 100% engaged. And I'm not a huge fan of the multitask. I think that there are very few things where you can multitask. You can drive and listen to a podcast. And that's because driving, you know, has become so automatic for me. You can't do two things that both require your mental bandwidth. And people try to do that. And they think that they're making progress when they're actually digressing. So there's that, right? So I said, you know, number one, putting a good team around me, great support. Number two, being present, being in the moment. And before I skip to number three, I put a quote on my social media probably a month ago. And I said something about the most important skill in today's economy is the ability to focus on one thing at a time.
Absolutely.
So your hyper performers are going to be the ones, because we are so bombarded and we are so distracted nowadays. Your hyper performers are going to be the ones that are able to focus on one thing at a time, to the extent that I agree with that statement, that that is no longer something that you can, you know, kind of helps you out or whatever. It is the most important skill of the successful. And then three, just, I work my calendar hard. My appointments they're set in stone. I have some flexibility with some things, with some meetings where, you know, I'll have a conversation that goes a little long and I'll shoot a text saying I'm going to run 3 or 4 minutes late, but I stay true to my calendar. I'm where I agree that I'm going to be. And, you know, I try not to schedule too many things because I know things are going to pop up. But I think those three tips are what I'm really trying to hone in on right now.
Yeah. And that being present component is incredibly important, and weeding out all the distractions. And in my own life, I have to turn off notifications on things. My phone never has notifications turned on. If I'm on the computer, everything has to be closed out. I have to work on it. And I have to go to extremes to make sure that I'm isolated from everything else out going on around me. Even this office where I'm doing podcasts, it's literally dedicated to that. There's nothing else going on here. Do you similarly have to do this, or does this come naturally to you? Are you just somebody who can just disconnect from everything else?
No, you know what's funny is that I don't have notifications on anything. Like my phone rings, I do not know.
That's funny. I was saying, if you die in the middle of the night or you have an emergency, don't call me because I don't answer it. Yeah.
No, I'm the wrong guy unless we had already planned on us being together. Then I'm the right guy because I will 100% be there every time. But no, I don't have any notifications on. Now I check my phone regularly, but if I'm in a project or whatever, I'll go a hard 2 hours without looking at my phone, and I'm trying to get even better at it. I've never had any type of notifications on social media. People that do, that is crazy. If somebody likes their post or sends them a DM, and I know that people have this because I'll message somebody and they'll immediately reply. I just don't want, not that I'm above those things. I just want to be the one that's in control of my schedule and my time. And when we have notifications on, somebody else is in control. So, And this is coming from a guy that I'm really heavily invested in social media.
Sure.
I post, you know, several times every single day of my life on, you know, TikTok, Twitter, Instagram. And I believe in those platforms. And I don't think they're inherently evil or anything. I don't think that's the case. I think like any other powerful tool, any other powerful resource that we have in our lives, money, vehicles, relationships, businesses, we have to be the ones that are in control. And if we're not proactive about being in control, the default is that they will control us. And this is especially true of our devices and social media.
Absolutely. No, I'm always concerned about the habits that I'm building as well. And a bad habit can quickly turn into an addiction. And that's what I see so many people spending their time, you know, on social media. And yes, if you have a dedicated time that you've managed around it, that's fine. But when your day is consumed with the notifications and checking them, you know, that can get crazy. So,
yeah, no, I think it's, you know, for me, it's to the point where I'll purposefully go, you know, Hunter will make a post and I want to see what it's like on Instagram, for example, a reel. And I want to see it because I haven't seen it. And I'll go to look at it. And then 10 minutes later, I'm scrolling through my feed or I'm DMing somebody and I'm like, what in the heck just happened? And that's the control that especially social media and other types of media and entertainment have over us, is that my purpose was to just go there to check my work, what I do for, you know, one of the things that I do for work. And all of a sudden I'm off in left field and everybody has a story like that. And the people that are most successful with controlling their time are the ones that are able to just hyper-focus and, you know, kind of plant hedges around their practices. And I have dedicated social media time where I'll just scroll through, do my research on what other people are posting and just kind of enjoy it. But when it's never 8 to 5 for me. I don't consume social media 8 to 5 unless I, you know, check out a video and end up getting trapped, which is exactly what they're trying to do. Everybody's just vying for our time and attention. And myself included, right? I want people to watch my reels. I want people to listen to my podcast. The idea is that I hope I'm adding some value so that they're not just wasting time, but that's not necessarily the case. And so we have to be very proactive about our time. And it's super cliche, Phil, to say this. It's super cliche, but my time is worth a lot more than my money. And a lot of it's because I have more money than I have time. But even for the people that aren't there yet, the way that you get more money than time is to be able to be proactive with it and control it and use it in a very deliberate, purposeful way.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. So I actually used one of your businesses. You're all the way out in Arizona. And
yeah.
I was surprised to find out you mentioned Proof. And I was like, man, wait a minute. I've heard that before. And it turns out we've used it out here, Proof Pest Control. And one of my employees, Dan, had scheduled it for me. And I said, hey, where'd you find out about it from? Mm-hmm. And he told me he Googled it and he went with the one that, I can't remember the word he used, but basically had the best reviews, had the best look, feel of it, and that sort of thing. Is that an important component of your businesses, your presence, the way the brand looks, the reviews that you have on the site, the story that people tell about your company? Are those all things that you're thinking about when you're rolling out or looking into a company that you want to grow?
Yeah. So especially businesses that I'm the founder of, I say that a lot of times because I'm a father, my businesses are like my children, right? You know, I have all these analogies, but one of the analogies is I can say kind of whatever I want about my kids, like, oh man, they're really driving me crazy today or whatever, but somebody else does. And it's like, okay, those are fighting words, right? Like something that's super personal to me. And that's how my businesses are. And I think really what it comes back to, Phil, is the reason why I started my business. my businesses, why I started Proof, why I started the other ones. I was an attorney in a previous, you know, my previous career. And a lot of people ask me if I didn't like it. Like, hey, did you not like practicing law? Did you, you know, have issues working with other attorneys or whatever? And it's like, no, I actually really liked it. I was making really good money, but I wanted something more. I've always wanted to build something. That is like deep rooted in who I am as a person. I'm a builder. I'm a creative builder, and I'm not creative in the type that, you know, I'm going to go compose some, you know, song or symphony or something, or I'm going to paint a masterpiece, but I create visions. And one of those visions is I care about my branding and I care what people say about my company. And that's true of all of my companies, because I think it's a reflection of me. And in today's day and age with the Karens of the world and how easy it is to hide behind a review, it's really easy to say whatever you want about a company. But what we do at Proof and with my other companies is that we listen to people. And now people have said stuff about Proof and about some of my other businesses, frankly, that aren't true at all, that they were just upset. They had a bad day. They didn't want to pay, whatever. And, you know, we hear them out and then kind of place them in the right category. But then it's the people that, you know, hey, your technician, just to be honest with you, he showed up and his shirt wasn't ironed, or he didn't look sharp, or he didn't sound like he knew what he was talking about. That is great information for a business. A lot of people don't like hearing negative stuff about their companies. I prefer to hear something negative than positive. Because if you saw our reviews in the Michigan area, one of our offices has like 1,500 five-star reviews, and we have a five-star rating. Mm-hmm. And that rating will likely never go below 5 stars. It won't even get to 4.9. And it's like, okay, that's awesome. But how do we get better? Like, tell me, like, what can we do to get better? And I'm very deliberate and purposeful about asking customers and employees how we can get better. And that all feeds into the branding, the image, the reviews, and the reputation of our companies.
So how do you pick a business that you want to get involved with? Because pest control seems like, I mean, realistically, it's been around for a long time. There's some really established companies out there. I think a lot of people, like if you were to come to me and say, hey, Phil, I want to start this new pest control, you know, company, and I'm going to compete with the big dogs, I'd be like, why? There's a lot of other ones out there. So I'd love to hear that story and then a little bit about how you determine a company that you want to get started with.
Yeah. So pest control, it's kind of weird, right? Because I was practicing law one day in the Phoenix metro area. And then the next, I had packed up my small family. I had a 2-year-old and a 6-month-old and moved to the Detroit metro area, which, you know, Detroit has a little bit of a stigma. People are like, wait, you moved from Phoenix to Detroit and you traded in a job as a successful attorney to become a bug guy? And they couldn't believe it, right? And I think the people that had the hardest time understanding what I was doing were my law school classmates.
Sure.
Because they were shoulder to shoulder with me 3 years of crazy difficult classes, studying for the bar after graduating from law school, taking the bar, all those sleepless nights. Like, they understood what I went through because they were right there with me. And for me, it kind of goes back to, hey, I wanted to build something. I didn't care necessarily what it was. And I think we get all sorts of different options. But pest control, I got an in because I had some experience in the past before going to law school. My brother was really successful as a door-to-door salesman in pest control. And so he and I decided to team up. And I've found that I really love that industry. I love the service industry. I love being able to take care of something that people don't even want to think about. They do not even want to think about having spiders in their house. And that's something where we can go in and we can immediately make their life better by solving a problem they don't even want to think about. They don't want to see anything. They just want it taken care of. And there's a lot of pros to the pest control or even any type of home service business. a little more recession resistant. There's a lot of value in recurring revenue, so you don't have to sell some, you know, new customers all the time like you might at if you're doing something in retail or something comparable. I like the camaraderie and the fraternity that's in the pest control industry. I really like the low barrier to entry. You don't need $100,000 to start a pest control company.
Mm-hmm.
You can start relatively slow. Now, we scaled our company from the beginning very quickly. So within a calendar year, we had already done $1 million in revenue, our very first calendar year. But you don't have to do it that way. But there were kind of all those things that drew me to the pest control industry, and I've fallen in love with it. You mentioned the Bug Bucks podcast. That is a podcast that's dedicated, you know, strictly to pest control owners and helping them build their businesses. But, you know, going back to your second question about what it is, you know, what it takes to get a business idea or what I kind of fall in love with. Now, I get pitched several times a week on different investments, and that's exactly what I'm looking for. I'm looking for people to come to me and say, hey, this is my business idea, Alan. What do you think? Would you be interested in investing in it? And a lot of times it's not the right fit for me. But coming up with a business idea, I think really comes down to something that's personal to an individual. What is it that you think the world needs? And you're always going to have a competitor. Doesn't matter if you invent something new. I own a company that has two patents. We have a product that we paint around the stem wall of a house, and scorpions and other insects cannot climb it. If it's applied correctly, it's 100% effective. But we still have competitors, so no one can use that. But we have competitors because there's, you know, pest control companies, or there's other types of exclusion or other types of physical barriers. So, you know, if you approach a business like, hey, there's this hole in the market, and maybe and it doesn't have to be solved with tech, Phil. It doesn't have to be, you know, I'm going to invent this new rocket and shoot it into outer space. It doesn't have to be I'm the next Google. It doesn't have to be, you know, something crazy. I've seen very successful businesses that were built because they just treated their customers a little better.
Yeah.
They were more deliberate with, they're like, you know what? I just went to, you know, Popeyes, or I went to a chicken sandwich place. Man, the customer service kind of sucked. Not saying that about Popeyes. I love Popeyes. But, you know, then you go to like a Chick-fil-A, and I don't know if they have those in Michigan. They have them here in Arizona, mm-hmm. in the South and stuff. Their customer service is incredible. And so you can find a niche with any type of frustration. And when I'm coaching people about business ideas, that's where I have them look. Where have you been frustrated? What can you do better? What skills do you bring to the table? What are you passionate about? So the real question is, what's the intersection of these three things? What are you passionate about? What are you crazy good at? And what could drive the economic engine of the business? And that intersection is going to be where you could find a viable business. And frankly, in the beginning, Phil, we have these grand ideas about a business, but one of the best characteristics of a business is that it will evolve. It Absolutely. Will change based on what the market is saying. It will change based on the economy or the microeconomy or the preferences or what's happening in technology. So with entrepreneurs, don't get super hung up on exactly what you're going to do, because it's going to change.
Yeah. I'd say like one of the biggest mottos that I've had as an entrepreneur is I'll figure it out. Because you could have the best well set plan, and it evolves and it changes as the market conditions and as your customers adapt them as well. And I love what you're talking to, because a lot of people I talk to, they say, hey, I got this great idea for a business, but it already exists, right?
Yeah.
Well, great. So what, right? You know, does that individual product or service, does that define it? No. It also has to do with the way you market it, right? Your customer service beliefs, all of it. It all goes into that. And that's as unique as you as an individual.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a great point. And, you know, I heard this story a couple of weeks ago about this product that was revolutionary, and it was patented. So it was unique, and it was placed on the shelves. I can't remember what it was, and everybody was excited about it. There was involved in the company, and it didn't sell anything.
Yeah.
You know, people were selecting the, you know, the competitors on either side of the product on the shelf. And it really came down to that marketing. And some of the best companies, like, look at McDonald's. I mean, maybe there's somebody out there that will argue with me that they have the best food in the world, but I don't think so. I don't think so. But they are one of the most successful restaurants, if you want to call them that, in the world. So they're good at something else. So that's a great point, Phil. Get into a business, even if there's something that already exists, and find out your unique selling proposition. What is going to make you different? And be true to that and back it up with more than just words.
Yeah, absolutely. I could tell you so many different businesses that have found it. They found the right market at the right time, and they had the different characteristics that set them apart from their competitors. And if you think about it, I think there was I've heard writers talk about there's no new original ideas. Like, ideas are always built on a predecessor, right? Over time. And there's nothing wrong with that. You can look at a situation like you did with, you know, with pest control and say, I can do that and I can do that better.
Yeah. No, it's 100% true. Like Facebook, okay, MySpace existed before Facebook.
I think there was five. I think they might've been the fifth major social media platform to hit, and they just hit at the right time, right?
Yeah, I think there were a bunch of factors that came into play with Facebook, but you know, they were unique, but they weren't first. And another thing about Facebook is, you know, tech companies in general have to be quick to evolve, and they recognize that. Remember, they started out, you had to have a harvard.edu email address, and now it's all over the world. So they were able to recognize that. Amazon started out as a bookstore. It's an online bookstore. You know, I don't know the last time I bought a book from Amazon, at least a physical book. So it's, you know, it's about getting started. One, entrepreneurs have a hard time because we beat ourselves up. We're like, no, we need to tweak this, we need to tweak that before we get started. It's like, you actually don't know what you need to tweak until you get some feedback. So get in there, take some risk. You might fail. So what? So what? That's what separates us from everybody else, is this idea that that's part of the process, that this matters to me so much that even though I know that I have a 90%+ chance of failure, I'm going to try anyway. I'm going to put myself out there and then just tweak it. Just figure out how to evolve your product, your business, your service, whatever, and make it better, because you don't know what's going to work. Mark Zuckerberg, he did not know when he started. He had no clue. Jeff Bezos, same thing, right? Elon Musk, all these celebrity entrepreneurs at one point they were just like me and you.
Just winging it and figuring out as they went along, right?
Exactly.
Well, Alan, thank you so much for joining us today. For everyone listening out there, how do they follow you? How do they keep in touch with you? And what do you got going on?
Yeah, so, you know, my podcast, The Business Growth Pod, is a great place to, you know, learn about motivation, personal development, things like that, especially for entrepreneurs. I'm very active on Instagram. My handle is Alan R. Draper, and then my website, alandraper.com. You could schedule 15-minute consultation with me where I can just go through the ins and outs with you about your business and see if I can point you in the right direction, help you raise some money, give you some additional feedback. And that's all free, man. That's all me just giving back. I've been very blessed. So I have a passion for early entrepreneurs, for startups. And, you know, that's where I want to give the most value.
Great. Thank you so much, Alan. And thank you for listening on the Successes podcast. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, brother.